Project Censored with Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Morning Mix. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Today is Friday, November 25th, 2011. It is Buy Nothing Day, and we're going to occupy that topic for this morning's program. We'll talk with Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, who helped work on a new book called 10 Ways the Occupy Movement Changes Everything. We'll hear from Steve Zeltzer of Workweek Radio, and we'll round out the show today with Callie Lazin of Adbusters Magazine about Buy Nothing Day, the Occupy Movement, and the future of capitalism. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. It's Buy Nothing Day, Friday, November 25th, all day today. So we're going to be looking into this subject, and we're looking into a more deeper analysis of the Occupy Movement. We'll start off today's program by speaking with Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, also a co-editor with David Corton and Steve Persanti, of a new book, This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement. Sarah, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Glad to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Could you tell our listeners just briefly a little bit about Yes Magazine and your history? It's 15 years now, right?
That's right. We just had our big 15th anniversary celebration at Town Hall in Seattle. We were founded in 1996, and the reason was, even though that was the Clinton years and things seemed to be bubbling along in terms of the economy, we knew then, just as we know now, that things were on an unsustainable track, and we were really interested in what people were doing to create a different sort of world. We felt that was something worth reporting on, something that we wanted to look for the stories. We wanted to find the people who were doing the best work on the grassroots level, and the people who had were sort of putting together the vision of how that could play out into a better world. And so we've been doing, you know, we just got our 60th issue done. Each issue's on a different theme. We look at things like how to close the prison system and move towards alternatives. We look at the amazing development of the local foods movement and how food justice in poor communities and young farmers out in rural areas are really radically changing the way we think about food. We look at things like sustainable happiness and what does it mean to be happy without over-consuming and using up the resources of the planet.
We're talking with Sarah Van Gelder from Yes Magazine, also has a new book out, This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement. And also wanted to remind listeners, Sarah and the good folks at Yes Magazine have long contributed to Project Censored in our Signs of Health chapter, our Good News chapter that Professor Ken Burrows does now with us from San Francisco State University. So very familiar with the work of Yes Magazine. We've long appreciated it at Project Censored. Peter.
Well, Sarah, it's great to have you on. And this new book you brought out rapidly, I mean, this is just just right into the third month of the Occupy movement here. And you come out with a book that this changes everything and how the Occupy movement is 10 steps and what's really different here. And this is a book that Yes Magazine's donating the royalties to the Occupy Wall Street movement, the 99% movement. So that's a wonderful effort, and we want you to tell us about this book. What's the main purpose?
Well, the main purpose is to try to wrap our arms around what it is that this movement is all about, because it is so diverse and so fast moving, and has had such an impact already in just these few short weeks. You know, we wanted to be able to say, well, what is this movement about, and how can we understand both from the inside? We have some wonderful pieces from some of the early organizers at Zuccotti Park talking about what that experience was like from the inside. And also, what does it mean in terms of the broader direction of our society? Are we really going to be able to take on these mammoth questions of corporate power and the growing inequality and the very difficult situation that the 99% are now in as a result of this lopsided power that's all been going to the 1%? You know, are we going to be able to take those questions on, and how can this 99% movement contribute to that?
We're speaking with Sarah Van Gelder, recently editor, along with the people at Yes Magazine, of This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement. And the book features contributions from Naomi Klein, David Corton, Rebecca Solnit, Ralph Nader, and others. There are 10 ways the Occupy movement changes everything, and you write in this recent article from November 10. First, it names the sources of the crisis. Second, it provides a clear vision of the world the Occupy movement wants. It sets a new standard for public debate and presents a new narrative. These are some of the points that you bring up here, and folks can find out more information about this and read the article, 10 Ways the Occupy Movement Changes Everything, at yesmagazine.org. Sarah Van Gelder, can you talk to us a little bit more about these points?
Sure. I think, you know, one set of points has to do with the way this movement has changed the political dialogue. Because from now, you know, if you remember back in last summer, everybody was talking about reducing the deficit, reducing spending, an austerity budget that was going to further harm the 99%. When this movement erupted, I think it's succeeded in changing the conversation. Joblessness is now appropriately at the top of the agenda. At least in every conversation that comes up about policies, there's at least in the background the question of, does this policy help the 1% or does it help the 99%? And the mythology that we've had in political dialogue about, you know, anything that helps the 1% will somehow trickle down to the rest of us, I think that mythology has now been rightfully put to rest, and people are very clear that policies that various politicians and political officials are advocating, some of them are benefiting us and some of them aren't. So that's one thing, is that it's really changed the political dialogue to where that question is front and center. A second thing is, I think it's unleashed a huge amount of political energy on the part of a lot of people in the 99% who are very frustrated but didn't feel like they had any way to get involved in the political debate. I think a lot of people who are facing joblessness, who, you know, many of whom have been jobless for months or even years, people who are losing their home, young people who are graduating from college deeply in debt and finding that they can't find a job that can both pay their student loan and pay the rent, people who are losing their retirement savings, veterans returning home from war and finding that there's no job for them. You know, that's just a huge percentage of people in that 99% are facing these kinds of really serious questions. And the way that that people framed it before that was that was somehow our fault, that we had somehow done something wrong, that we were finding ourselves in those kinds of financial straits. And I think the Occupy Wall Street movement has changed that understanding to where people now say, no, I didn't do anything wrong. I played by the rules. You know, I went to college and earned a degree, or I worked hard, or I tried to work hard until I was laid off, and suddenly things aren't working anymore. Well, there's something wrong here, and it's not my fault. So that sense of shame has been turned into a sort of political awakening, so that people are now realizing that by working together, we can actually transform those structures and those systems that are causing all the wealth and power to go to the 1% and the 99% to be left behind.
And this 1%, this is transnational. This is the transnational corporate class, the central banks in Europe and around the world, the multinational corporations that operate almost without regulation by governments. They become governments unto themselves, hire private militaries to protect themselves. This is the power of these corporations that we've been talking about. And so it creates a big tent for the 99%. And we have to think about that. That includes the 50 million people who are poor in the United States. It includes the 1 billion in the world who live on less than a dollar a day. And, you know, so that puts us in the same place. And it's all the people in the working class who are still working, but literally know that they're one paycheck away and have lost, you know, from being homeless and have lost their homes, millions a year now, through foreclosures because of Wall Street speculation on the housing market that massively increased the value of homes. Everybody thought their home was going up, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's worth half of what it was. And people got caught in debt problems with that and get laid off. We have 6 million fewer jobs than we did a few years ago here in this country. So there's many, many issues that are coming to play here. And we are seeing young people emerge with that, highly educated young people saying, hey, this isn't working for us. And now we know where we have to focus. So I like how you create a big tent. That's one of your main ideas. And it names the source of the crisis, the transnational power structure, the 1%. And where do you think we're going with this?
Well, let me just come back to the big tent idea, because I think this is a fascinating one. I think a lot of our politics up to now, including politics on the progressive side, have been very siloed. There's been, you know, well, I'm a student and I'm upset about my student debt, so therefore I should be in this particular organization. Or I'm, you know, I'm a person who's losing their home, so I should be in, you know, or I'm, so we've had this very siloed kind of a politics, and I think this big tent organizing is just incredibly powerful. I've been to a number of Occupy sites, and one of the things that you see there is you see homeless people who've been living on the streets for months or years, and they're sitting down and talking with kids that come out of middle-class homes and might never have had that kind of conversation before. And then you see people coming out of their office jobs with their suit and tie, and they know that they're one paycheck away too, and they're talking to those young people, and they might never have spoken to each other. And then you have people of different races, and they have, in many cases, there are caucuses, people of color caucuses for particular ethnic groups or racial groups or gay and lesbians, but there are caucuses within this big tent. So instead of allowing ourselves to get divided, as has so often been the case, I think this movement so far has been wonderful at creating that sense of inclusivity, which is also incredibly powerful. And where that goes from here is that you know, with that kind of inclusivity, and then with the openness and resilience of this movement, you know, anyone can declare themselves an occupation and start protesting. And that's happening, of course, as we know, all over the country. There's just hundreds and hundreds of these occupations of various sorts springing up everywhere. And that makes it very difficult to put this movement down. Because, you know, you put one down, you raid one site, and another one pops up a short ways away. Or one gets too cold and maybe has to slow down a little bit in the middle of the winter, and so maybe some of the sites in the south can take their place and become the center of some of the activities. I just had a chance to spend some time in Occupy San Francisco and Occupy Oakland. And, you know, Oakland, of course, just got raided, and now they're looking at what their next steps are. I think a lot of the next steps for a lot of the occupations will be small autonomous groups that will set their own protest agenda. Some of them will go and disrupt foreclosure hearings and keep people from getting thrown out of their houses, or they might even occupy foreclosed homes or buildings. I think, you know, we saw the people who went on the subways, and small groups went on different subways and told their own stories and sought to involve commuters in the issues of how the 99% is coping. So I think these small autonomous groups that are taking on their own actions, but still under this big umbrella, this big tent, I think is going to be the way that things are going to be evolving. And then occasional days or events that bring everybody together into very large, powerful outpourings like last Thursday.
You're listening to Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. We're talking about a new book, This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement. You can get more information about that at yesmagazine.org. And again, we're here with Sarah today occupying the airwaves, right? We're occupying Free Speech Radio airwaves on Buy Nothing Day. And you mentioned so many other points here, both in the article and in the book. This is a movement, not a list of demands. It's local and global. It offers an ethic and practice of deep democracy and community. It's really about reclaiming our power, the power of we the people, reoccupying the commons. And Sarah Van Gelder, you write with David Corton and Steve Piersanti in the article, 10 Ways the Occupy Movement Changes Everything. You say, like all human endeavors, Occupy Wall Street and its thousands of variations and spin-offs will be imperfect. There have already been setbacks and divisions, hardships and injury. But as our world faces extraordinary challenges from climate change to soaring inequality, our best hope is the ordinary people gathered in imperfect democracies who are finding ways to fix a broken world. Can you talk a little more in detail about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you visit a Occupy site, you can see that, like any other human community, it's not utopia. You know, we're imperfect people, and our interactions are imperfect, and those general assemblies that have these extraordinary features of being so inclusive can also run very long. They can be dominated by people who, you know, have a lot to say and may not create enough space for people who have other things to say. There have been crimes happening at Occupy sites of one occupier against another. So this is not utopia. And I think that for some people, once you encounter the first sort of slap in the face of something happening that is really not right, or that you feel uncomfortable with, you might back off. And I think that's often happened in progressive movements in the past, as people get disillusioned quickly and then they just throw up their hands. So I think the thing to remember here is that 99% is a very large number of people in a very big tent, and in that process there's going to be a lot of struggle and a lot of imperfections, and the best thing we can do is to stay with it and to struggle with each other and to speak our own truth and not be afraid to speak our own truth. I think one of the biggest sources of disagreement right now is the question of what they call diversity of tactics, the question of whether it's okay to break windows or it's okay to destroy property, and potentially even if it's okay to assault other people. And for the most part, I think the Occupy movement has been quite extraordinarily nonviolent in the face of multiple attacks by police and multiple forms of violence against the protesters. But there have been a few people who insist that they should be able to, you know, break windows or set things on fire. And I think that's the biggest hazard for the movement right now, is that if that particular ethic of a very tiny portion of the movement comes to be seen as the dominant form of that movement, I think that the movement will very quickly lose its support.
Well, there would be every effort by the power elite, the 1%, to present the occupied movement as deviant, as violent, as threatening, as filled with unrest and troublesome people, where in fact what we're talking about really is a remaking not only of our own constitution and capitalism worldwide. We're claiming our sovereign right to do that, to build democracy, deep democracy, from the bottom up, and that takes work, of course. And these occupied locations are in fact that, as they were in Spain last May and continue to be in Greece and other places. Sometimes this takes civil unrest and desires to that. So one of the important things about this book is you say we reclaim our power. And that is, you know, so many people across the country say, what can we do? Well, it's, you know, we have a Congress that's made up of mostly millionaires. It takes corporate money and millionaires to even get there. So it may not be that the electoral process is really going to be the primary focus, but the focus will be in far greater areas at a local level, whether it's flash dancing in a bank or whatever we're doing. We do it in unison. It seems extremely powerful.
That's right. And I think that's one of the things that is so important about this, is that it has felt to so many people that there really was nothing we could do. And I think a lot of those people were staying home, and maybe they would send a check every once in a while to somebody they support, or maybe they would vote. But so many people had been basically feeling that there was nothing they can do. And that has totally flipped. I mean, just now in any community around the country, you know, you can find, all it takes is a few people to say, you know what, we're gonna stand up here. We're gonna stand up at street corners. Maybe we're gonna pitch a tent in the lobby of Bank of America. You know, we are no longer going to sit by and let this, our society, be dominated and frankly destroyed by the power of the 1%. We're going to be setting our agenda from now on. And that just changes everything. Quite honestly, I think that is why this moment is so significant. It's already, just in these 2 months since the Occupy movement started, it really has shifted the possibilities for what can happen next.
That's the voice of Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, co-editor, along with David Corton and Steve Piersanti, of This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street, and the 99% Movement. And you can read the list of 10 ways the Occupy Movement changes everything online at yesmagazine.org. Sarah Van Gelder, we only have about a minute left in this segment. Could you have, could you give us some conclusive remarks?
Well, I'd love to say something about Black Friday, since that's what today is. There's a working group at Occupy Oakland that is working to promote the idea that instead of buying as we normally do at this time of year, this is a good time to boycott the big corporate retailers and support your local retailers, because they're part of the 99% too. We need those local businesses to be part of our movement, and there's actually a group at Occupy Oakland that is working to promote that kind of understanding between the occupiers and the local business community. So if you're going to go out shopping today, I definitely encourage you to honor Buy Nothing Day. If you are going to go shopping today, support your local retailers. They really need the help.
Well, buying nothing today, buying nothing this weekend, avoiding major purchases from big corporations, and trying to support local business is this whole part of occupying our space and our rights and building democracy from the bottom up. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's, again, the voice of Sarah Van Gelder, yesmagazine.org, co-editor of This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Honesty Without Fear, the Whistleblowers Radio Hour on Tuesdays at 1 p.m.
After every scandal, we learned that there were citizens who tried to alert the public, but were silenced and retaliated against.
I did not grow up wanting to become a whistleblower, but it was my job and my moral obligation to demand that truth and justice be honored.
Hear from leading whistleblower lawyers about how you can protect yourself if you expose waste, fraud, or corruption.
This country would be a much better place when we all recognize the contributions that whistleblowers make to our society and protect them from retaliation.
Learn from prominent whistleblowers who've lived through it.
Support those who protect you.
Whistleblowers are key to holding government and corporations accountable. Empower yourself. Know your rights.
Tune in to hear me interview some of our nation's heroes.
Tune in to Honesty Without Fear, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, where we talk about my favorite subject, food. Learn how you can make a positive difference in your life and all life on Earth every time you eat. To listen to the show, go to PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Oh, Jeff.
Yes, Lee?
I just want you to know.
What?
You occupy my heart.
Aw.
Cheater on the Rude with Jeff Chrysler
and Lee Papa. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern. Check out our old shows on the archives.
Archives? That sounds like some weird yellow moldy paper stuff.
And you can listen to all of our old moldy shows at PRN.FM.
Did you hear the Progressive Radio Network has a new slogan?
It does.
It does.
Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
That sounds sort of progressive.
It does, it does, but I think it needs to be a little more demanding.
Progressive Radio Network is moving forward,
and we want you to come
with us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Join us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health call-in talk show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time.
We'll be talking about current health news, plus Vicki shares her entertaining 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour.
And if you miss our live Monday shows, they're archived on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and Dr. Saputo. That's DOCTORSAPUTO.com.
The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
This is PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. It is Buy Nothing Day. This is Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Our next guest is Callie Lazin, founder of Adbusters Magazine, part of Adbusters Media Foundation, a filmmaker. He's also author of Culture Jam and Design Anarchy. Callie Lazin is also one of the main forces behind the Occupy movement as well as Buy Nothing Day, and we're pleased to be joined by Callie Lazin today. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, yeah. And you know, we're not really the people behind the Occupy Wall Street movement. We're just the people who sparked it, you know, a couple of months ago.
Well, right. You certainly encouraged it to happen.
Right.
And it was ready to happen, and it's been spontaneously growing worldwide, and certainly needs to be. And you've talked about that, as we have at Project Censored, for a long time.
Right, yeah. So it's quite an exciting development.
Well, Callie, tell us about the spark. That's definitely the more apt term. It's certainly not, you know, we don't mean to imply that, you're behind this whole thing and it's being orchestrated, because it's really not an orchestrated movement, and that's certainly perplexed the corporate media. So could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that's the power of this movement, actually. It's got this strange new sort of way of getting things done, which is driven somehow by the culture of the Internet and young people with their social media tools and their different way of looking at the world, somehow coming up with ways of magical new ways of doing things, which seem to be more powerful than many of the ways that we certainly myself, older activists, you know, were doing stuff. In the old days, it was much more a kind of a vertical thing with leaders and wolf packs and clearly articulated demands, and this time around it seems to be leaderless, demandless, and a kind of a horizontal movement, which I think has a special new magic, and I think that in the past, you know, like back in 1968, we failed our this big global splash that we had back in 1968. It fizzled out, but this movement, I predict, is not going to fizzle out. I think it's got long legs, and we will be able to pull off some major radical transformations of the world as it is today.
Well, as thousands of occupied locations are emerging, not only in the U.S. but around the world, this Buy Nothing Day, which is today, kind of feeds into that fairly naturally. Tell us a little bit about Buy Nothing Day, when that originated, and how you think that helps where we're going.
Buy Nothing Day is now 20 years old. This is the 20th time around that we've done this, and I think that back 20 years ago, I think it was the first time that we started waking up to the dark side of consumerism, the fact that every time you buy a product, you're actually putting some extra stress on the planet, and that also many people are psychologically sort of stressed out by this hyperactive consumer culture of ours. And then there was also a political dimension always to Buy Nothing Day, where we had a feeling that this huge gap between the rich and the poor people of the world, where we, the rich 1 billion of us, you know, we basically use up about three quarters of all the goodies in the global marketplace, and we leave a lousy 25% of it for the rest of the 6 billion people on the planet, and then we wonder why so many of those people hate us, and why we have to fight wars against terror and God knows what. So there's an interesting kind of a ecological and psychological and political sort of a ethic and philosophy behind the day. And I think that now in this, as part of this Occupy movement, we've, on the back cover of our recent, of our current issue of Adbusters, we have this hashtag Occupy Xmas. We're hoping that this year, in addition to people going on this consumer fast for one day on the 25th on Black Friday and having this epiphany that so many people have on that day when they go cold turkey on consumption and then they start sweating and then they realize halfway through the day that they, you know, they really do have to have that coffee or that Mars bar or whatever it is, and they wake up to the fact that the consumption plays a very addictive role in their lives, and many people come out of that day having had a very hard time and vowing to change their lives afterwards and think differently about the role that consumption plays in their life. But then this year we also hope that the occupiers, that they will start in the second phase of our movement, the second phase now after the raid on our spiritual center there that Bloomberg pulled off. We hope that we can have a kind of some edgy theatrics and some some various pranks and shenanigans and some surprise flash mobs and stuff like that happening throughout the whole Christmas season.
A creative resistance. We're talking with Callie Lazin of Adbusters magazine. You can learn more about Adbusters online at adbusters.org. For our listeners, Adbusters is a global network of artists, activists, writers, pranksters, students, educators, and entrepreneurs who want to advance a new social activist movement of the information age. Their aim is to topple existing power structures and forge a major shift in the way we live in the 21st century. Callie, can you talk about this Occupy movement? How are we to live then in this 21st century? And let's look at a broader picture of this. I mean, this is really not just a critique of corporate capitalism and cultures of consumption. It's really a springboard into something else.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the basic core impulse behind this whole movement right from the start is this this kind of a feeling that a lot of people, especially young people, have in the pit of their stomach, in their gut, that the future simply does not compute. You know, that they have to look forward to this black hole kind of a future of ecological crisis and climate change and rising temperatures and tipping points, scary tipping points hovering on the horizon. And that politically they're caught in this pretty corrupt system where the corporations pretty well get whatever they want with their money and their lobbyists in Washington, D.C. And also they have this kind of a financial crisis that feels like it's never ending. Like some people feel that they're never going to be able to pay off their student loan and that they'll never be able to live, buy a house and live the sort of comfortable life that their parents did. So I think that the impulse that gave birth to this movement is goes very, very deep. And I think that in this second phase, now that Bloomberg has taken out our spiritual heart there, I think we are going to, this winter, I think we are going to brainstorm and we're going to network and we're going to start thinking about some pretty radical transformations of the current system that we have in the world. I think that one of the broadest and biggest ways of looking at this is that we may be able to pull off a deep transformation of consumer capitalism itself. And the reason I say that, I know it sounds kind of grandiose, but I think people are waking up to the fact that what is the global economy? At the moment, there is $1.3 trillion a day, every day, sloshing around the global economy in derivatives and credit default swaps and all kinds of other financial instruments. It's like a global casino. It's like a Las Vegas gambling place where people with their hand on a mouse in front of a computer are making money off money off money off money ad nauseum. And that $1.3 trillion is actually 50 times bigger than the actual commercial transactions that actually mean something to the economy, the part of the economy that actually gives us our jobs and actually means something. So I think that one of the projects that will emerge next spring will be a kind of an attempt by the young people around the world to slow down that fast money and to dismantle that global casino. And I think we'll be going for things like trying to ban the high-frequency flash trading that is now such a dominant part of the whole system, and we'll be trying to push for a 1% Robin Hood tax on all financial transactions and currency trades. And of course, a lot of people will be pushing for a reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act, and we'll be talking about banking reform, and possibly even a conversation will begin about what I feel is one of the biggest culture jams that we could possibly pull off in the future, which would be a kind of a move towards a sort of a global market regime, a two-cost market regime in which the price of every product tells the ecological truth. this is the kind of brainstorming that we've been doing here at Adbusters over the last while, you know, wondering where this Occupy movement could go over the next few weeks and months and possibly years.
Cal, you're saying that the movement represents a deep democracy, that people in the streets are talking to each other, thinking through and visualizing how they want the world to be. Environmentally sound, better equality, human rights for all human beings, the elimination of the 50 million in poverty in the U.S. or the 1 billion people who live on less than a dollar a day, and a sharing of that wealth, a sharing of that concentration, the $1.3 trillion interacting.
This is what most of the media has been missing about this movement. They keep on saying, well, what are their demands? You know, why don't they engage with the political system? And why don't they come and tell us what they want? And what they don't get is that what we really want is a kind of a regime change in America. We want to come up with a different kind of a democracy. We want to have a level playing field between people and corporations. And we want this kind of a getting rid of the corruption at the heart of D.C. And we want some systemic deep down change, and I think this is what's going to sustain the movement and keep it going, and I hope that we can actually next year start pulling off some of these radical transformations.
We're talking with Cali Lazin of Adbusters, adbusters.org. There are many places from the Adbusters site as well that link about the Occupy movement now in its third month, occupytogether.org. There's occupywallstreet.org. And you can also see live streams, U.S. Stream, live stream. You can find out more at these websites, and you can link them all from adbusters.org. Again, we're talking to Cali Lazin from Adbusters Magazine. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips for the Project Censored Show on Buy Nothing Day. We're happy that you're joining us. Cali, let's talk about the future here a little more, and let's talk about more of an analysis of capitalism and moving beyond this whole idea. What do you see the future here?
Well, I think I sort of covered it pretty well in what I just said. I think we are looking for a deep transformation, and there are a number of very specific ways of getting the thing done. Of course, something as huge as moving towards a true cost market regime, that may take years and years, and at this stage of the game, it feels a little bit like a pipe dream, but nonetheless, it is a wonderful idea, this idea that, at the moment, most things that you put your hand in your pocket, you take your money out, you buy something, and every time you do that, you get the planet deeper into a hole, because the, you know, for example, if you buy a car and you pay $25,000 for it, then who's going to pay for the fact that for the next 5-10 years you're going to be running around, you know, pushing carbon into the atmosphere and exacerbating climate change? What we're doing right now is saying, oh, well, let future generations worry about that. Let future generations pay for that that cost, which may be actually many times bigger than $25,000 we actually paid for the car. So if we suddenly move towards a two-cost marketplace where the price of every car and the price of every Mars bar and the price of every napkin, even at the napkin that you get at some fast food store, if every product told the ecological truth, you know, then we would suddenly have a sustainable system. And I think that at the moment, of course, the current sort of system is absolutely dead against anything like that, because that would be a major disruption of the status quo. But I think that I believe that magical things can happen in the future here, and I predict that one of the things that could be happening next year, maybe starting next spring, is the birth of a third political party in America, a party that somehow is a strange hybrid of the right and the left, with a few of the Tea Partiers even coming to join us and it would be this strange hybrid new party that would get us beyond this kind of a Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola choices that we've had now for so long. This deadening, choiceless, nothing ever changes kind of a choice that hasn't gotten us anywhere. Maybe this party that this is really pipe dreaming now, but maybe this party will be called the True Cost Party of America, and its target will be, its commission will be to talk everybody in America into the implementation of a true cost market regime.
What I hear you saying is that We're going to ask the transnational corporate class, the top 1% of the world, to slow down and not destroy the world, not continue to compete with themselves and China and Russia over world resources and who's grabbing what, and that, of course, leads to wars and occupations worldwide, to certainly slow down on military spending and start to look at the human cost of all of this and the environmental cost, and to put it in a more bottom-up perspective in terms of power and decision-making.
Yeah, well, I think that it's time for us to stop asking those people to do anything, because as soon as you ask, you're in a subservient position, and you basically say, okay, you guys have the power, and we'll be really nice, and we're going to bow down low before you and ask you to please do this and please do that. And what I really like about this Occupy movement is that they're not doing that. They're saying, look, we don't like you guys. You've done wrong. We're going to get you. We're going to change things. We're going to take power away from you, and we're going to start calling the shots from now on. You don't ask permission. If you want to change the world, you don't ask permission. And I think that for the first time, certainly in the 20-year history that I've been putting out adbusters and launching social marketing campaigns, for the first time I feel the political left finally starting to have a bit of backbone, having a little bit of chutzpah, having a little bit of guts, and being able to be visceral and stand up and show some real basically to start living without dead time, instead of all this whining and complaining and finger pointing and pussyfooting that we've done for the last 20, 30 years. This is the moment when we jump over the dead body of the old left and really start changing the world.
That's right. And the mouthpiece of the 1%, Callie Lazin, the mouthpiece of the 1% is the corporate media, and the way that they've tried to cover Occupy, and you certainly have your some interesting interactions with folks in the corporate media over Buy Nothing Day and advertisements and trying to advertise to Buy Nothing. They don't like that. Even when it comes down to their making money on advertisements, they don't, CNN and others don't necessarily like to announce to people that there is this other way. There's another way to act in the world, and there's another way to work with resources.
Yeah, well, I really felt that when I tuned into the ABC and CBS and the NBC evening news, at 6 o'clock, and I was absolutely dumbfounded by the way they covered this, what happened in New York and what happened in some other places around the world. I mean, they really tried to poo-poo the whole movement. They basically said, oh, it's a very small number of people actually came here and nothing much happened. And then they went into the and talked to some of the people and said, well, what do you really want? And they were sort of out to actually make the occupiers look bad. And then they would feature the people who didn't come up with really good answers for what they really want. And after watching that, if you were just an ordinary American sort of person looking at the evening news, you'd get this feeling that this Occupy people are just a bunch of loony lefties and they don't amount to anything and they didn't even turn out in any great numbers. So that there's something, there is something profoundly wrong with the commercialized mass media. It is just not giving us the information that we need to make wise decisions about the future.
It's into entertaining us to death, essentially.
Yeah, it's just all about celebrity culture, especially when I look at CNN. It just and then some of the other commercialized stations. I mean, they really just want to catch your eyeballs and keep you there until the next ad comes on, and they really have very little to say.
But what we're watching now is that millions of people worldwide are saying no to this. And it's not, if we do form a political party, I think one of the worst things we would do would be buy television time on CNN. We're going to have to use our social media, use our connections, use our own media from the bottom up, and we build a movement that involves people and gets on people's doorsteps and the porches and in the town centers and the quads of the universities to have conversation and develop growth and expand that way.
Yeah, well, but I think one of the things that will be happening also next year as we sort of come out of winter hibernation and come up with the flowers that are blooming in spring, will be, the birth of new ways of getting information. I mean, we already have, Democracy Now! and a whole bunch of other alternative ways of getting our information, but we have to turn that alternative into something more mainstream. And I know the young people in my office, they don't even watch TV anymore hardly, and then they're kind of tuned out of that whole commercialized mass media loop. And that would be a critical part of this whole Occupy movement, is to, for us to sort of occupy the commercial mass media and to start giving people alternative visions of the future.
Kelly Lazin, we have to wrap up today,
okay,
but it was a pleasure to have you on. That was Kelly Lazin from Adbusters Magazine. You can learn more about what's going on with the folks at Adbusters at adbusters.org. And remember, today is also Buy Nothing Day, so again, you can go and learn more about that at the website. Thanks for joining us, Kelly.
Delightful talking to you.
Well, to wrap up today's show, we're going to have an announcement about next Wednesday, November 30th at 7 p.m., David Barsamian will be speaking on media, propaganda, and censorship. Barsamian is the founder and director of the award-winning alternative radio network in Boulder, Colorado. And he will be speaking at the Arlene Francis Center for Spirit, Art, and Politics, 99 6th Street in Santa Rosa. That's in the Old Town area. And he will be introducing the new book that he has with Noam Chomsky, How the World Works. So, Media, Propaganda, and Censorship, November 30th in Santa Rosa. The Barsamian event is sponsored by the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County, Project Censored, Media Freedom Foundation, Media Roots, and Fair Share, the Common Heritage Project.
That does it for today's Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Special thanks to Anthony Fest and all who made today's show possible. Thanks to our guests, Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine, Steve Zeltzer of Workweek Radio. Thanks also to Kelly Lazin and the folks at Adbusters Magazine.